Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much, Rabbi Weider. And it's good to be here with you once again tonight. Last week, we began discussing the question of what we're missing and what we're longing for. We talked specifically about Mashiach and what is it exactly about Imos HaMashiach that we are hoping to get. And today I'd like to talk about the same type of question, but really from a very different perspective, including a halachic question. I'd like to talk about what exactly is a Beis HaKnesses? What exactly is a shul? I think that this is a time in our lives that we're very much missing our Batei Knesios. Many of us have not been in shul for many months. Some of us may have started coming back, but I'd like to talk about what is a shul, the relationship between a Beis HaKnesses and the Beis HaMikdash, the halachos of a Beis HaKnesses and how they reflect the Beis HaMikdash, and then return back to the question at the end, which is, what is the difference, what do we lack, and what do we long for? I think a lot of people think about Jewish history and the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash in the following sense. Until the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the primary avoda was the avodas hakorbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. It's the sacrificial cult. And the focus of the temple was sacrifices. And with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, then the center of Jewish spiritual life shifted from the Beis HaMikdash to the Beis HaKnesses. But more importantly, it shifted from the sacrifices to tefillah. And it's understandable why a person might think that. Just look at how much of the Torah focuses on avodas hakorbanos, how little actually focuses explicitly on tefillah. Rabbeinu Yonah sounds like this to some degree in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, on the three pillars that the world stands on, Torah, Avoda, and Gemilas Chasadim, in which he indicates that originally Avoda was Avodas HaKorbanos, and now it's Avodas Tefillah. But the truth is, I think the matter isn't so simple. Certainly the Rambam disagrees with that, Rabbeinu Yonah. But if we just look at the Psukim, we see that a strong emphasis of the Beis HaMikdash was also tefillah. Just two sources that highlight this, the first two sources of the source sheet. And if anybody doesn't have it, I will share the screen, but I can't because the host has disabled it. So you could download the source sheets and I will take a look at the first source. This is from the tefillah of Shlomo HaMelech at the inauguration of the first temple. And I could share now. So this is from the tefillah of Shlomo HaMelech at the inauguration of the first temple. And Shlomo HaMelech is davening that the Beis HaMikdash basically be successful. But what is it that he asks? So this is only one pasuk from a bigger prayer, but I think it's very telling. Lios einecha pesuchos el habayis hazeh laila v'yom el makom asher amarta yesh misham l'shmoa el atfilav asher yispalel avdecha el makom hazeh. Shlomo HaMelech davens, he prays, that Hashem listened to the tefillos of the Beis HaMikdash. And if you look at that prayer in general, you'll see the emphasis isn't Hashem, please accept the korbanos. Again, to be sure, korbanos are a big part of the Beis HaMikdash. But the emphasis is tefillah, and that the Beis HaMikdash was a makom tefillah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shlomo, begs, should answer the tefillos that we offer in the Beis HaMikdash. And Shlomo Melech even says that you should answer the tefillos, not just of the Jew, but even the non-Jew. You see that perhaps even more powerfully in Yeshayahu Nunvav, a pasuk that we're all familiar with, source number two. Vavi osim el har kachi, v'simachtim beveis tefilasi, olo zeichem v'zivchehem l'ratzon al mizbechi, ki v'si v'es tefila yikare l'chol ha'amim. My house, the temple, is a house of prayer for all the world, l'chol ha'amim, for all the nations, not even just the Jews. Obviously, the Jews have a special role, but it's a base tefila l'chol ha'amim. So, while there was certainly a major shift when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and we can no longer bring korbanos, but we shouldn't see the shift in as cataclysmic terms, because even the Beis HaMikdash is defined here in two sources as a makom of tefillah. In fact, much of the tefillos that we have, the structure, the words, the timing, were instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGdola during the period of Bayis Sheni, when the temple actually stood. And certainly the Rambam paskens that tefillah every day is a mitzvah d'oraisa, not necessarily with a specific language or specific times. But that's not our focus tonight. Our focus tonight is the Beis HaKnesses itself. There's not that much in Tanakh about a Beis HaKnesses, maybe a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, a reference at least, but a very famous pasuk that we're all familiar with is source number three. This is a pasuk for Yechezkel, and this is really what brings us to tonight's discussion. And in this pasuk, Yechezkel, who remember actually was in exile, he was in Bavel, he prophesied from the exile between the first and second temples. Lachain amor ko amar Hashem Elokim, ki hirchaktim bagoyim, I have distanced them in the nations, v'chi hafitzosim ba'aratzos, and scattered them among the lands, v'ahi lahem l'mikdash me'at ba'aratzos asher ba'usham, and I will be for them a mikdash me'at in the nations that they have gone. The Gemara in Megillah, source number four, as well as the Midrashim, point out, look where it's in the second paragraph, source number four, that he lahem mikdash me'at am Rabbi Yitzchak elu bate knesios uvate midrasho shebebavel. According to Rabbi Yitzchak's interpretation, what is the mikdash me'at? It's a reference to the temples and the study halls, the synagogues and the study halls in Bavel, presumably not just Bavel, but throughout the exile. In other words, what the Gemara is telling us and what the Pasuk is teaching us, the truth is this might not be the Pshuto Shel Mikra. The Pshuto Shel Mikra is even one step further. It's that I, God myself, will be for them in Mikdash Me'at. The idea that the Gemara says in the previous paragraph in Megillah, that when God exiled us, though the exile is in many ways a lack of Hashras Hashchina, the temple was defined by God's tangible presence. Exile, in many ways, is defined by the lack of presence, as we talked about last week. But still, the Gemara says, Bo Ure, beginning of source four, Kama Chavivin Yisrael of Ne'akadosh Baruch Hu, Shebekol Makom Shegalu Shechina Imayim. Though it is true we've been exiled from our lands, but God remains with us. In exile, the Shechina is with us. And not only that, but the Gemara continues that when we are redeemed from exile, this Shechina will come back with us. The Pasuk says, B'shav Hashem Elokecha Shvuscha, God will return your remnants to Israel at the time of redemption. It doesn't say V'heshiv, which would mean that he will bring us back, but V'shav, because he's going to come with us. He went with us into the exile, and he's going to come back with us from the exile. But while we're in the exile, what do we have? We don't have a mikdash, obviously. The temple has been destroyed. But we have what the pasuk tells us is a mikdash me'at, a miniature temple, a small temple. We don't have the base on mikdash, but we have a mikdash me'at. And the bate knesios and the bate midrashos are that Mikdash Me'at. And not only that, actually, the Gemara concludes, we'll talk about this a little later, but the Bate Knesios and the Bate Midrashos that are in Chutz La'aretz will come back to Eretz Yisrael. When we are redeemed, our synagogues will come with us. We'll return to the meaning of that, I hope, shortly. So is there any halachic significance to the fact that a Beis HaKnesses is considered a Mikdash Me'at, a miniature temple? Is that halachically significant? So the answer is it's actually quite significant, because the Mishnah tells us in Megillah, source number 5, that the halachos of a Mikdash Me'at, of a synagogue, are modeled after the Beis HaMikdash. And not only that, but the Mishnah over here tells us that even if a Beis HaKnesses is destroyed, lays in ruins, there is sanctity and respect that must be given to that Beis HaKnesses. And how do we know that? We know that from a pasuk about the Beis HaMikdash. Vashimosias Mikdashechem, the pasuk says. And the Gemara, the Mishnah, deduces from that formulation of the pasuk. The pasuk says that your temples shall lay in desolation, that they are still considered a temple, even when they lay in waste. Kedushasan af kashahen shomamin, which means that just as we know there is sanctity to the temple today, even though the temple lays in ruin, so too, if a shul is destroyed, there is sanctity and it must still be treated with respect. And you see from this Mishnah that a Beis HaKnesses is called a Mikdash. When the Torah refers to a Mikdash, it's not just referring to the Beis HaMikdash, but it's also referring to a Beis HaKnesses. And therefore, the Yireim writes, Yireim, Rebbe Elazar Mimitz, one of the Rishonim, that when there are mitzvos that relate to the Beis HaMikdash, they also apply to the Beis HaKnesses. So, for example, there's a mitzvah in the Torah called Mora Mikdash. The pasuk says, "Eretzem Eloka Tziva Panes Adam leMikdash Ol Beis HaKnesses Ol Beis HaMikdash Shen Yin HaMora VeKibud Yosef Hashanah Esham Sof Tishmoru UMikdash Tirau." There's a mikdash mitzvah of Yira miMikdash. Doesn't mean for the temple. Temple is just a building. It's a reflection or a manifestation of your fear of God. But there is a mitzvah in the Torah that basically tells us that you must treat the Beis HaMikdash with reverence, with respect. It says that from our Gemara and Megillah that we just saw in verse number 5, we see that that mitzvah is not limited to a Beis HaMikdash. That mitzvah is also relevant to Beis HaKnesses, meaning that the halachos, now they might not be identical, it's only a mikdash me'at, so perhaps there are stringencies about the temple that don't apply to a Beis HaKnesses. But the basic mitzvah in the Torah, and Yireim sounds like he thinks this is de'oraisa, there's an iser de'oraisa to treat a Beis HaKnesses without proper respect, just as there's an iser de'oraisa to treat the Beis HaMikdash without proper respect. This is also the view of the Smak, another Rishon, source number 7. He says it even differently, which is interesting. He says, Usman hazeh Beis HaKnesses Mikdash Me'at. Sounds like in the absence of the temple, the mitzvah almost transfers to the synagogue, as opposed to the Yireim, who indicates that this would have been whether there's a Beis HaMikdash or not. Regardless, we have a mitzvah de'oraisa, according to the Yireim and to the Smak, to treat a Beis HaKnesses with reverence, with respect, with awe, with dignity. Along similar lines, the Mordechai, writes in source number 8 that just as there is an Isser de Oraisa to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, so too there's an Isser de Oraisa to destroy a Beis HaKnesses. Once again, you see that he's equating on a de Oraisa level the Beis HaMikdash and the Beis HaKnesses. The Rambam in his Minyan HaMitzvot seems to say the same thing in that sense in source 9, though in the Mishnah Torah it doesn't sound this way. Somewhat of an issue what the Rambam holds. We should note that not everybody agrees it's a din de Oraisa. The Ran in source number 10 implies that it's a din de Rabbanan. This is probably the view of the Ramban there as well, though he differs for the Ran with the Ran about the reasoning. But whether it's an Isser de Oraisa or an Isser de Rabbanan is not so relevant for us. What's relevant to us is that the Halacha treats a Beis HaKnesses like a Beis HaMikdash in many ways. And most importantly for us, there are actually a number of manifestations of that halacha, a number of halachos, even regarding the building of a Beis HaKnesses, that are built off of the halachos of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Schechter has an article in Eretz HaTzvi enumerating many, many similarities. But what I want to focus on today, in the remaining time we have, is one that's most relevant for us. Most of us aren't building a shul, but we all have gone to shul. We either go now or we hope to return to shul soon. And we have to learn from the halachos of the Beis HaMikdash how we are supposed to act in the Beis HaKnesses. How are we supposed to behave in shul? And I think that this is a really important time to think about this question. Because like I said, having been exiled from our shuls for months, we all, first of all, really miss it. And more importantly, I think that it's an opportunity as we return, either if we have returned or we're going to return, we hope soon, for a reset. A reset. Whenever something is taken away from you, you oftentimes come to appreciate how important it is for you. Perhaps you didn't appreciate it as much when you had it. And it's a time for a reset about how we treat our shuls. So what are some of the halachos in terms of reverence for a Beis HaKnesses? So take a look at source number 11, the Gemara and Megillah. Tana Rabbanan. Batei Knesios, ein noagin ben kalas rosh. A person may not have kalas rosh. What does kalas rosh mean? They may not be frivolous, light, joking around in a shul. A shul is a place where one should be bekoved rosh, with seriousness. It's not a place where one should be light. And we continue. Ein ochlin b'hen, one may not eat in a synagogue. Ein shosin b'hen, one may not drink in a synagogue. Ein neosin b'hen, you can't adorn yourself in a synagogue. Ein metailin b'hen, you can't chill in a shul. Ein nechnasin b'hen, b'chama mipnei achamo, v'gshamim mipnei agshamim. You can't just go there, enter a shul, because it's raining outside, so you don't want to get wet, or it's sunny outside, so you want the shade. Vein maspidin b'hen, you can't offer eulogies in them. There are exceptions, maybe, for communal leaders. Hespedim are mutter, even then, only without the mace. We only allow a mace in a shul if it's the Gadol Hador or someone extraordinary. So what are these halachos teaching us? The halachos are basically teaching us that we must treat a shul with much respect. Can't joke around in a shul. We'll see that in the Shulchan Aruch shortly, which is source number 17, the Shulchan Aruch emphasizes this point. You can't have schok, joking around, v'hitol, v'sicha b'teila, empty talk, not just schmoozing. The Mishnah Berurah explains, just schmoozing in a shul is really usher. even if it's not joking around, if it's sicha betela, if it's not meaningful, significant talk. So these halachos are quite significant. Now, there's actually a very interesting question that comes up that some of you might be wondering about, which is that there are some shuls that do eat and drink in the shul. Obviously, that's not ideal, and many shuls don't have to be lenient on this because they have social halls, but some shuls don't have a social hall. If anyone, you know, most shtiblach, if they have a kiddush after davening, it's in the shul. If they have shalosh shudis, it's in the shul. How could that be? It's against a mefurish halacha. So it's actually interesting if we continue along source 11 to the next paragraph. Amar Vasi, bate knesios shebibavel al tenaihe masuyim. The bate knesios in Bavel are made on condition. V'afal pichein enogen ben kalos rosh. You still can't be lighthearted, lightheaded. Maniu cheshbonos, you can't even make calculations. But we are more lenient about the shuls in chutz laretz. Now, why dafka chutz laretz? So the mefarshim explain because. Well, let's actually wait one more second before we get there. So what does it mean that the shuls are built on condition? And what is permissible? So if we take a look at Rashi, source number 12, Rashi says, Al Tanai, Al Menashi Shtam Shubahen, they're built on condition that they be able to be used. In other words, it doesn't permit lightheartedness. According to Rashi, you'd be able to have Shalosh Shudis in shul, you'd be able to have a kiddush, assuming people are behaved during the kiddush. In a shul, because the synagogues are built al tanai. Tosfos, however, source number 13 says that's not true. Tosfos says, "Rotzalomar kolzman shein betelin." The tanai only works after the shul is destroyed. Why does Tosfos say that? Because Tosfos, among other things, cites a story in this Gemara. If we go back up to source number 11, we could see the story. The story is about two Amorayim, Ravina and Ravada Bar Masna, and they were talking and learning. They were asking a question from Rava, and then it started to pour. So they entered a shul, and they explained, why was it permissible for us to enter a shul? Because we're discussing a halachic matter, which requires clear-headedness. If we're outside in the rain, we won't be able to focus our attention on this question of halacha, and that's why it's permissible for us to go into the shul. But otherwise, if not for the fact that this halachic analysis requires clear-headedness, it would have been usur for us to go into the shul. Now, this story took place in Bavel. So you see that conditions don't allow, the fact that they're built al tanai, the fact that they're built on condition, doesn't allow you to use them any differently than a shul in Eretz Yisrael. So what's the condition? The condition says that after they're destroyed, then they don't have the full sanctity of a shul. And that's why it's dafka and bavel, not in Eretz Yisrael, Toso says, because in Eretz Yisrael, we expect the shuls to last forever. In chutz laretz, we don't. We hope that we're going to be redeemed soon. Toso actually addresses the issue, but aren't the shuls going to come up with us? Ayin Shem. Either way, the point is that according to Rashi, it would seem that it would be okay to have shalosh shudis in your shul. According to Tosfos, it would be absolutely usur. There's a third view. That is the view of the Ramban. It's quoted in Iran, source number 14. The Ramban says that it's permissible to eat in a shul occasionally, not regularly, but occasionally if there's a great need. And that's what the Tanai allows. For example, there are poor people. The poor people have nowhere else to sleep. So they could sleep in the shul. Poor people have nowhere else to eat. They could eat in a shul. But regularly, this isn't permissible and under normal circumstances. And the Ran actually gives an interesting proof to this. There's a Gemara in Pesachim that says they used to make kiddush and shul for the guests that ate and drank in shul. Well, Tosfos has a big problem with that. You're not allowed to eat and drink in shul. So Tosfos answers that the guests must eat in side rooms, not in the shul, because you're never allowed to eat and drink in shul. Whereas the Ramban says no, because of dochak. Rashi also wouldn't have a problem with that. Rashi has to deal with the problem of the fact that why couldn't they go into the shul because of the rain? Rashi might say, this is what the Rishonim say for Rashi, that that story reflects Amidas Chasidus. So basically, we have three opinions. According to Tosfos, eating and drinking in shul is usur under all circumstances. According to the Ramban, in Chutz Laretz, it's mutter if there's a real tchak. And according to Rashi, it's mutter always as long as there's no schok v'kalas rosh, as long as there's no lightheadedness joking around in the shul. So could you have a kiddush in the shul? So according to Tosfos, no. According to the Ramban, also probably no. According to Rashi, yes. How do we paskin? The Shulchan Aruch paskins like Tosfos, the most machmir view. This is the Shulchan Aruch if you look at source number 17. The Rama and the Magen Avraham might be a little more lenient. They might follow Ramban. It would still seem that a kiddush is not permissible in a shul. So is there any justification? So there's a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein, source number 18, who says, well, maybe you could have a kiddush in shul, maybe you could have shal shittus in shul if you follow Rashi's view. And the fact that in so many shuls we are lenient about this indicates that maybe we paskin like Rashi. Now, this is a bit of a problem because it's against the Shulchan Aruch. He says, well, maybe this is the minhag, and one has the right to follow the minhag, though perhaps it's not ideal. Rabbi Willig actually has a different theory to justify the shuls that have, let's say, kiddush in the shul. Willig thinks, you see from there, we can't be like Rav Moshe because we don't accept Rashi Shita. It must be that a shul that has a kiddush in the shul really isn't a Beis HaKnesses. It's a multi-purpose room that they happen to daven in. So you could daven there, but you shouldn't think you'll have the advantage of davening in a Beis HaKnesses. One way or the other, everybody's going to agree that you may never be light or joking or schmoozing in a shul. A lot of times when we're in shul, there's talking during davening. So we all know that talking during davening is wrong. Some of us aren't as good about it as we should, but we sometimes think, okay, during davening I can't talk, but I'm allowed to talk in shul. But the truth is that schmoozing in shul, even not during davening, is aser. Schmoozing in Torah is mutter, obviously. Torah and Yira and the like. But certainly any type of lightness or joking around in a shul is aser. And that's because it's a mikdash ma'at. That's because, like we said at the beginning, it's almost like a Beis HaMikdash. We all intuitively know that joking in the Beis HaMikdash would be wrong. But most people don't think that joking in a shul is wrong. And that's because they don't fully appreciate that a shul is a Beis HaMikdash. It is a Mikdash Me'at. And therefore, just as we would all naturally know that we're supposed to treat the Beis HaMikdash with tremendous reverence. It's the makom of Hashras HaShchina in the world. So too, when it comes to the Beis HaKnesses, we have to treat that with tremendous reverence. So now let's go back to the question that we started with, which is, what are we missing? We might be missing our shuls, but a shul is a mikdash ma'at. So we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, but we still have the mikdash ma'at. So is it really so bad? Why are we mourning now for these 3 weeks, for our whole lives, for the whole year, for the loss of the Beis HaMikdash? After all, we have a mikdash ma'at. We read at the beginning that there's Hashras HaShchina even in Galus. Hashem comes with us to Galus. So what exactly are we missing? So the answer is that while it's true that a Beis HaKnesses is a Mikdash Me'at, but it's only me'at. It's only me'at. And because we've never seen the Beis HaMikdash, it's hard to imagine what a mikdash that isn't me'at is. You know, we could imagine it in a sense of imagining what the building looks like. We could study Maseches Midos. They now even have these really cool videos. You could even do virtual reality tours of the Beis HaMikdash into the Kodesh HaKodashim. So we could imagine what the temple structure looked like. And surely that was magnificent. But that's just architecture. That's just bricks and bone, bricks and mortar. There are plenty of exquisite buildings around today. What is really hard to imagine is what the Mikdash was as a Makom HaShrashrina. And that's really what defines the Beis HaMikdash. V'asuli Mikdash v'shachanti v'socham. It's a place v'ashras HaShchina. And it's not just in the Mikdash, but it's in all of Klal Yisrael. B'socho lo ne'mar ela b'socham. The Beis HaMikdash, and through the Beis HaMikdash, we could all connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Perhaps we could best appreciate this with the tefillah that we all say, Sheyibane Beis HaMikdash b'mehera v'yameinu b'sein chalkeinu b'sorasecha. Please God, build the Beis HaMikdash quickly in our days and give us our portion in the Torah. What do those things have to do with each other? Build the Beis HaMikdash, give us our portion in the Torah. But the tefillah says that without the Beis HaMikdash, we don't have our portion in the Torah. We lack Chalkeinu B'Sarasecha. Because without the Mikdash, without that Hashras HaShchina, we can't connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the same way. We can't perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the same way. That's what we lack, and that's what we mourn for. So Be'ezras Hashem, as we begin returning to shuls, we hope quickly, let's take advantage of the opportunity for a reset. Let's make sure our Batei Knesios are really mekomos of Torah and tefillah and avoda. One aspect of shul we all miss is probably the social aspect, and there's something to that as well. But it's a mikdash me'at. And Be'ezras Hashem, with the schus of treating our batei knesios and our batei midrashos, shebe bavel, as a true mikdash me'at, we'll be zocha b'mehera v'yameinu to have not the mikdash me'at, but the true Beis HaMikdash. Sheyibane Beis HaMikdash b'mehera v'yameinu v'sein chalkeinu b'sorasecha. Have a good night, and thank you for joining me.